Tom Gimbel joins us on WGN Radio regularly. There he is again. How are you, Tom?
I'm doing great, John. You staying cool?
Yeah, but you know, my complaint, and boy, talk about a first world problem, is it's too cool. We are spending too much money. We're doing too much air conditioning in our big buildings in America. Your thoughts, go.
I like being cold.
Okay. Well, I'm staying plenty cool, and I'll be outside later on, and I'll be taking in the heat. Talk to me a little bit about employment trends. I know that you have something to say about that today.
Well, I think what we've got going on right now is this balance in the economy. There doesn't seem to be as many entry-level jobs. We've got people a little bit nervous for the first time. And we haven't seen employment decline since 2010, John. And we're going to see for the first time in, 14 years, we're going to see that it's harder to get a job than it's ever been. And at the same time, you've got stuff like you were talking about earlier, the laws in Australia, where people are trying to decrease the amount they're working, following up on all the post-pandemic stuff. So yeah. I think we're in a really interesting dynamic that a lot of workers under the age of 35 have never experienced.
I do hear from the parents of young workers or young workers who say they're having trouble finding a job in their chosen professions or at a position that is commensurate maybe with their education or experience. But the unemployment rate is still 4%. I'm not exactly sure how much more unemployment or employment we can have.
Now, I would equate it to, because the unemployment rate has been so low historically, it's similar to mortgages, is that, you know, when I got a mortgage 25 years ago, it was 6.5, and there was no complaints. You just took it, and that's what it was. Now you get 6.5, and everybody thinks it's crazy because we had such low interest rates for so long that you didn't have to. And it's the same thing with unemployment, is that you're exactly right. 4.1, 4.2, 4.3, whatever it is still really historical low unemployment. But when you were in the 3.6, 3.7 levels of unemployment, it seems like a lot. And so it's just a different economy and a different mix than we've had, like I said, for a decade and a half.
But to your point, the jobs maybe now are not paying as well as they were maybe during the pandemic. Is that true?
No, I don't know if I necessarily see that. I mean, hourly-wise, the minimum wage and just regular hourly wage is well above what it was in 2019. I mean, we know, you know, it used to be $10 an hour, is $17, $18, $19 an hour, and that's not going backwards. And on the salaried side, what was an entry-level job for $45,000 a year or $40,000 is now $55,000 or $60,000, and I haven't seen that slip back yet either. So I think there's a lot of fear, and there's a lot of gossip and a lot of whispers, but I haven't seen the reality that salaries are declining.
What do you make? You mentioned this a moment ago. We're talking to Tom Gimbel, the job expert, the founder of the LaSalle Network. About that law in Australia that you can opt out of communication with your employer after you punch out for the day, even if you're salaried after you leave the office. If you work till 5, if you decide, they can't contact you. What do you make of that, Tom?
Well, as a loyal John Williams listener, I was listening earlier, and my dear friend Mr. Alexander, I think, said it right, is people are going to want to do the work who want to make more money, and they're going to get rewarded. And what ends up happening is the people who don't want to work as much, they feel like they're being punished. And that's the real lens to look through, is because somebody else is succeeding because they're working more doesn't mean that you're being punished. It means they're doing more and they're getting rewarded. And it's not an equal playing field where somebody who's not doing as much doesn't get as much. That's capitalism at its best.
And did you agree with your friend John Williams that maybe that works for the people who don't want to work that much? I mean, if you want to put in,
it is,
if you want to put in 41 hours a week, that's great. And then have more time with your kids. You win, as far as I'm concerned.
It's true, but then they'll complain at raise time and bonus time. I've seen it. I've been doing this for almost 30 years. And people who voluntarily take a step backwards or voluntarily say, I'm okay with that now, a year later, they forget that. And they're like, well, wait a second, I did good. Why aren't I getting more? And then they pressure the employer. People, and it's not, it's human nature to want more. And it, there's very few people that are willing to say, I'm okay with watching my peer do better than me. Jealousy is, well, what's the expression, keeping up with the Joneses? And when you see the guy or girl in the cube next to you, who, well, you probably wouldn't because you want to work remote and you want to make more money. But let's hypothetically say you're in the office and you see the person next to you getting a plum assignment or making a little bit more or getting a bigger bonus check. You forget that you asked for less and you complain. And that's just human nature.
And maybe we'll have more of this conversation another day, but maybe it's not too much to ask for your cake and to eat it. That is, why do I have to pay a price? Because I value my family as much.
Because
as
there's you, that's not it at all. That's the problem. You're not paying a price. The person who's willing to sacrifice is going to make more. And because you don't want to make, and you're not making less, but you're making less compared to the person who's willing to sacrifice more. And people are going to say, well, I should make as much as that person.
You say, no, you shouldn't.
That's not fair.
Tom Gibbon is the job expert and the founder of the LaSalle Network. Okay, Tom, really interesting today. Thanks for your insight.
I'll look for you swimming in the lake, John.
Yeah, well, I did yesterday. And in fact, I think I will today. It's Philip Weiss, the president of SciFarth at Work. We've been talking about work. By the way, Philip, I just wanted to read a couple of messages based on Tom Gimbel's appearance a minute ago. Hey, John Williams, a friend sent this yesterday. I read over 200 plus work emails every day while on vacation. 847 said work-life balance will help everyone do better. Employers need to embrace that. And does Tom really think you get rewarded for working harder? That's ridiculous. I don't know if you agree with any of that or disagree with any of that. Philip, how are you today?
Great, John. Good to be here with you. And now that is an age-old debate, which is to say, are you paid for work or are you paid for results? And I think the answer is a little bit of both. And sometimes, of course, it's an unfair system in place and you're paid for who you know and how you engage with them. But to your listener's question about 100 plus work emails, a lot of our clients on the sort of cutting edge have already instituted rules whereby on the weekend, the email system just turns off. On the holidays, it just turns off. If something truly merits emergency status, John, people can text, and they know that is a last resort. And the result is a sea change in how people feel about their free time. And interestingly, but perhaps not surprisingly, it makes them more effective when they get back to work because they haven't been drained or frustrated in what should be their off time. So there are some methods that work, but you need the commitment from the top down.
You are looking at what it would be like for employers if Kamala Harris becomes president. Why are you looking at that, and what are you seeing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, given the impact of the Democratic convention, the current poll numbers, a lot of corporate leaders are the ones looking at Kamala Harris's potential presidential policies as they directly impact employers. And as we might suspect, given that it's a Democratic administration, if it wins, workplace protections for employees are going to be top of the agenda. And Kamala Harris has made no bones and has not hidden the ball on the fact that that's been a priority for her, both in Congress, as vice president, and as California Attorney General. What is fascinating and what clients are telling us they're seeing or is being revealed to them as they look at her record is she's actually been most active not at creating wholly new laws or developing entirely new statutes that protect employees, but instead supplementing with what we might call step-up or snap-on statutes or laws. That is, ways to take existing laws on the books, John, and make them a little tougher, a little harder to evade, and a little stronger in the application. So that's been a kind of her pragmatic approach, something employers should be thinking about if they've skirted or been lax in terms of their adherence with current laws.
What's an example of this?
Well, there's a few really good ones. She was instrumental in enhancing the civil rights law protections, both in Congress and outside as VP, in terms of enacting rules that prohibit forced arbitration, meaning employees being compelled not to sue their employers, even if they've been poorly treated and being required to go to arbitration. Or she's been very successful in addressing the risks of non-disparagement clauses in employment contracts and outlawing those as well, which is to say not allowing employees to say anything bad about their employer once they sign on the dotted line and get hired. And, of course, that makes it harder for them to take action or express themselves later. So there's a whole host of areas where the laws were on the books, but employees still felt stymied or limited or curtailed in terms of speaking up or acting in their own legal defense. And what's interesting is the law that emerged out of her efforts and those of others was called the Speak Out Act. So kind of speaks for itself in terms of the title, and was signed by President Biden, but it really emerged out of her efforts and those of others in Congress.
I've never understood how an NDA or these non-disparagement clauses are enforceable. It seems to me like if something happened to you, you ought to be able to say it, either for your own benefit or for the benefit of other employees, be it just it's a lousy boss or maybe something criminal happened, but you've got an NDA and what are you going to do? I don't understand how that even exists.
Yeah, your insight is something that we sort of on the legal side have grappled with. And it's really a tricky area, John, because there are parallel rules that allow employees to, for example, talk about working conditions under the union-related laws. So that's interesting. And there's the fact that some companies choose not to ever enforce non-disclosure because they realize it might be tricky to win the case. But still, interestingly, the presence, the mere presence of a non-disclosure or non-disparagement clause in an employment contract will scare employees to keeping their mouths shut. Mm-hmm. So it's one of these issues where the law is highly complicated, not always utilized, but still serves as a hammer in terms of the employee's ability to say something or do something.
Well, if they give existing laws more teeth, that's one thing. But do you get the sense that big business or medium business, the business community is a little wary of a Democrat administration, either because of tax policies or embracing unions and labor? Can you talk maybe big picture about how the employment world feels about a possible Harris administration?
Yeah, so right now there's two reactions that we're sort of sensing, I would say, because it's really anecdotal. Companies are and leaders are looking to see what her meat and potatoes policies will look like as she rolls them out. They have taken some real solace in looking at her record and realizing when she's pushed hard, it's been to make the laws that are out there work better. That's been a kind of eye-opener for people. And the administration that preceded Biden was racked by a certain kind of sort of confused havoc when it came to policies affecting companies. So they're hoping to get a sense from Kamala Harris and her team that there will be a reasoned and a stable set of policies in place. So I think the answer will become clearer to a lot of them
right. As
we get closer to Election Day. But that's why they're looking at her record, John, because they want to see, are we going to face a whole lot of new laws, or really are we going to be held to the test in terms of complying with what's already out there? And that may well be the reality they face.
Yeah, those are some of the questions they say she does need to start answering. Philip Weiss is the president of SyFarth at Work, SyFarth, SyFarth at Work. Okay, Philip, we'll talk again.
Thanks for having me, John.
This is WGN. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I mentioned this a little while ago. There is a series on Amazon Prime that has a new season that's about to drop. It's called the College Tour. And I think it sounds like a good idea if it is what I think it is. That is, wouldn't it be nice if instead of driving all around the country or the suburbs, you could see from, say, a student's perspective what it's like at these various universities and colleges around the country. The College Tour focuses on a single college or university. This season, one of the schools they're featuring is Midwestern University. You hear commercials for Midwestern University frequently on WGN Radio, and sometimes we talk to some of the students or principals there. And today we do just that. Tiffany Thompson is here, and Alexis Flamboris is here. They are Midwestern University students. Tiffany, ladies, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having us.
You all have you seen the episode that is about Midwestern University? You participated in it, right? The recording of it?
Correct.
So, Alexis, you saw it. What does it look like to you?
So, actually, we haven't even seen the episode yet.
You haven't seen yours yet?
No.
So, but you've already recorded it. They've interviewed you. You've done your shtick and all of that.
Correct.
Now, I've seen episodes with previous schools, and in that, it looks like about a half-hour long show, and there's a host, and then there's some production values, music, quick cuts, and we see students kind of tell us about their journey. Does that sound about right?
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
And so let's start with you, and Alexis, you can jump in too, but or Tiffany, but Alexis, so you're a graduate student then, because Midwestern University students are. What was your bachelor degree in?
So I actually got my bachelor's degree in finance.
And where did you go to school for that?
I graduated in 2017 from Loyola University Chicago.
I see. And what was your plan when you graduated? Did you want to go into business?
So that was the plan, and I actually worked 4.5 years in the corporate world before I decided to quit my corporate job. While I was actually working throughout those 4.5 years, I was taking science classes since I don't have the science background. I always kind of knew I wanted to pursue healthcare, but I wasn't sure what that was going to look like. So one day I decided to just quit my corporate job, pursue pharmacy school, and within 2 months after that, I was accepted to Midwestern's program.
So you're a pharmacy student at Midwestern. How far along are you in that then?
I'm actually a second year right now.
Got it. And then, so do we see you on campus when they were filming you? Were you kind of walking through what your experience is like at the school?
Yes, you'll get a very good look at what the school is like itself, sneak peeks into what our pharmacy lab looks like. So it's a really good idea of what it's like to be a pharmacy student.
What is that like?
It's hard, I'm not gonna lie. Pharmacy school is very rewarding in the sense that it's difficult, but at the end of the day, you're doing something that's going to help the greater population. So for me, it's studying hard now so that way I can provide the best care for my future patients.
Whenever I see the pharmacist behind the counter at the pharmacy, Walgreens, CVS, wherever I go, those people look busy and they're on task and they've got a ton of things going on at the same time. They also strike me as being a lot smarter than me. And I'm always appreciative of that because, you know, they're either mixing or handing me drugs that are vital, aren't they?
Yeah, it's funny that you actually bring that up because I'm currently on my community IPI rotation. So it's an introductory pharmaceutical experience rotation. And I'm actually at a retail chain right now. And it's exactly how you described it. It's busy. We're constantly interacting with the patients. But at the end of the day, it is like the first place you can go to and have direct access to healthcare right at the pharmacy counter.
And this is part of your Midwestern University educational process, though.
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
I'm glad to hear that. Okay, so Tiffany Thompson is here also. Tiffany, tell me about yourself. You're a graduate student in what program?
Osteopathic medicine.
Bone medicine then? What does
that
mean?
So that's more orthopedic, which is what you can specialize in residency-wise. Osteopathic, it's we learn the same exact as allopathic schools, so MD schools, but it's more of a holistic approach to the patient instead.
What's your background? You got a graduate degree, or you're working on that now. What was your undergrad in?
It was in neuroscience and philosophy.
What is that?
A lot to do with the brain.
Neuroscience and philosophy. But I mean, weird, because that sounds science and medical forward, and then philosophy doesn't. What's the intersection of those?
There's a lot of interplay when it comes to how the mind's working and philosophical ideas. One in specific that I had worked on paper-wise was about the thought process of language to pain, and that how someone's brought up can actually determine how much pain tolerance they might have.
I guess it does make sense that if I was going to study the brain, the output of the brain is your thoughts, your feelings, your philosophies. So, boy, that sounds holistic. And then what are you studying now then at Midwestern?
So right now I am studying to be a physician, a doctor. So at the moment I'm a third year, which means I'm on my rotations where I spend a month at different specialties trying to figure out where I want to go in terms of residency in the future.
So then what was it like for you when this college tour comes to town? So you ladies are here because you are two of the featured students from Midwestern University on the new TV series on Amazon Prime called The College Tour. So what was it like when they reached out to you then?
I was actually shocked. I did it.
I'm not.
I did it more of a New Year's resolution of try something new, of put myself out there, and ended up on in front of a camera.
Oh, so did they have an audition or
it
a casting
was,
call?
Yeah.
Like, do you want to be in this series? And I guess, so Alexis, you had the same sort of opportunity that way?
Yeah, so the school actually emailed us and said, Amazon Prime is doing the college tour. If you want to be featured on it, send us a 2-minute video. And it'll get screened, and if you're selected, we'll be in touch.
Why did you want to be on it?
Not to sound silly, but I kind of always wanted to be on TV. I just never thought pharmacy school would land me on TV.
Who knew that would be the way in?
Exactly.
And what about you? Why did you answer the email? Why did you try out?
Like I said, New Year's resolution, try something new. I'm not usually one to really put my face and my voice out there. And to do so, now it's kind of permanently out there. So
Have you seen any of the clips that you all have participated in?
We have not. It has not been released yet.
That's a little terrifying, isn't it?
Just a smidge.
How do you think you did, Alexis?
I got some great feedback from the crew that was filming.
Like
I got
what?
That I did well,
yeah.
That the footage looked great. Also, a couple folks from school, actually our director of marketing, Mike, and our digital media specialist, Molly, they both said that they've seen the episodes and that it looks excellent. So I'm really looking forward to it.
If it's like a reality show, though, you are sort of, and it is, it's a sort of tour of a college campus, you sort of do turn your fate over to the producers. Did they ask you to do certain things like hold this test tube or pretend like you're looking through a microscope or something like that?
Yes, there was definitely a lot of that. But they did it in such a way where it looks natural and it looks like we're actually in the classroom doing the things that we're showcasing.
You felt like it was representative of what you do at Midwestern?
For sure.
And what was your experience along these lines like?
I would say it's very similar. I mean, they were very easygoing, so it got any nerves kind of shaken out very quickly. And I enjoyed being able to bring my friends into it and drag them into it.
What do you mean by that?
So there's different aspects of it, of showcasing, like studying to show off the library and just the surrounding area, campus, and bringing them in just to have a fun little conversation with them was nice.
Yeah, I would imagine that depending on the school or university, where is Midwestern University located?
Downers Grove.
Right. So that's a suburb of Chicago, but it's not a sprawling University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana campus. Did you get the feeling, though, that they are going to kind of give us a tour of the grounds and the buildings as well?
Yeah, for sure. So, like, for my segment specifically, I could speak on that. We used a lot of different spaces on campus to kind of showcase, you know, the one end from campus to the other.
Yeah.
And I know from other college tour episodes that I've seen, they do a lot of like drone shots and a lot of
right.
little pieces in between each student segment.
I've seen those as well. And I would imagine Downers Grove in your area would film very, very positively.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to watch. And when, how, and where do we watch this? Okay, we'll get to that in a minute. Stay right there. It's 12:45 on WGN. We're talking to Alexis Flamboris, who is a Midwestern University graduate student, as well as Tiffany Thompson. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and we've got more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. CDK Global, the suburban software firm that serves U.S. car dealerships, says the cyber attack that impacted its operations earlier this year does not appear to have involved the theft of dealership employee or consumer data. The Hoffman Estates-based company was hit with a ransomware attack in June. Bloomberg says the company conducted a thorough third-party review of the incident and found no compromise of personally identifiable information. CDK says dealers can reassure clients that their data remains secure. CDK reportedly paid a nearly $25 million ransom to end the attack. Dealerships use CDK software to manage everything from scheduling to sales and orders. Kroger, the parent company of Mariano's in Chicago, is listed in a new report highlighting retailers who charge high fees for cashback transactions. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau says Kroger, Dollar General, and Dollar Tree charge consumers more than $90 million annually in fees charged to consumers who pull cash out at the end of a grocery transaction. CFPB says it only costs the companies a few pennies per transaction, but they charge $1 or more to customers who withdraw less than $50 in cash. The high fees come at a time when consumers, especially those in smaller towns, have lost access to local banks where they can withdraw money from their account for free. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
We got the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, food and football this time around, and Dave Ennett said he wasn't going to cover this, so I will. When Iowa State University takes on North Dakota this weekend, there will be a lot of people watching what happens on the Iowa State bench. Will players Miles Purchase and Tyler Moore and Tommy Hammond and Caleb Bacon line up in order so that the backs of their jerseys read
Purchase, Moore, Hammond, Bacon.
More about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, a TV camera caught Iowa State football players Tommy Hammond and Caleb Bacon standing next to each other on the sidelines.
An Iowa State fan tweeted it out and tagged us and said, hey, can we get these guys an NIL deal?
That's Kevin Hall of the Iowa Pork Producers Association, and the answer was,
heck yeah.
NIL deals for those two and two more.
Miles Purchase and Tyler Moore.
And the pork marketer's dream didn't end with those four.
We looked down the roster and we found Alec Cook and Zach Lovett. So what do you do after you purchase more ham and bacon? You cook it and you love it.
And the video of the players had millions of views in a matter of hours. All sorts of nationwide coverage for the Iowa Pork Producers.
It just took off like crazy.
This season, all the players are back, sort of.
Tommy Hammond made a decision to leave the football program. Is going to focus on his engineering degree, but he's going to stay at Iowa State.
And all the players are getting a raise in that NIL money.
We more than doubled what we paid them last year.
Plus, they get pork.
We donated $1,000 worth of pork to the food bank or pantry of choice of each player.
And how about this?
To the surprise of a lot of people, Iowa State had a better season last year than people expected, and Caleb Bacon especially started to shine. Here's a guy who's from a small town in Iowa, came to the program as a walk-on, and he earned a scholarship at the end of the season, and he's really one of the team leaders now.
Purchase more ham and bacon, named the best NIL deal of the year by Sports Business Journal.
We hope it'll be even better this year.
On the food calendar, it's National Red Wine Day, and it's National Cherry Turnover Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food and football on 720 WGN.
If you haven't heard, there is a show called The College Tour, where for 12 seasons now, this is season 12, they showcase different colleges and universities across the country. And one of the universities they're featuring this year is the one we talk about sometimes, Midwestern University. And in fact, you can watch the episode that features them starting September 10th. They will host it at midwestern.edu. Midwestern.edu. Now, Midwestern University is in Downers Grove. They also have a campus in Glendale, Arizona. So it's 2 half-hour episodes, one based on the Arizona campus and one based on the campus here in Illinois. Tiffany Thompson and Alexis Flamburis are in our studio, Midwestern University students. And one more time for those who just dialed in, Alexis, you are studying what at Midwestern?
Pharmacy.
And your background, your undergrad was in?
Finance.
So you were a career changer. And then you have just kind of been coming up through the academic line all along, maybe with your eye, Tiffany, on something in the medical field, right?
Yeah. I don't have any doctors in my family, so I kind of figured it out on my own.
And you are in your third year, did you say?
Yes.
So how many more years do you have before you graduate and go into the work field?
So that's a loaded question. One more year until I graduate, and then depending on my residency, I still have more training. So it could be 3, it could be 8, it could just never end if I keep doing fellowships.
It's amazing what we ask students in medical fields to go through. I really think it sounds arduous. I wonder sometimes if it's not too much. It's expensive. It's a lifelong commitment, which makes maybe what you're doing, Alexis, all the more interesting. I mean, you were carving out a nice career in a completely different profession, weren't you?
I was. But throughout my entire time in that career, I would always think about how it wasn't fulfilling me in the way I wanted. It wasn't as rewarding as I wanted. I knew I could do something with like a greater purpose. And like I mentioned earlier, for me, that was healthcare. But for me, it was something that I wanted to pursue that didn't involve too much blood, too many guts. I don't really do that. And
right.
Pharmacy is kind of the cleanest route in that sense.
I understand that Midwestern University is in the near future going to initiate a veterinary school, which would sort of be in line with the medical occupations that they prime people for. Where are you ladies from then? Are you from the Chicago area?
Yes, born and raised. I currently am in Orland Park.
And how about you?
I was born in Maple Park, Illinois, and I currently live in South Loop.
So then how did you all hear about Midwestern University? How about you?
So for me, it was actually a Google search. When I was starting to look to make that jump out of the corporate career that I had, I was trying to find pharmacy schools in the area. And for me, the biggest thing was finding somewhere I can drive to every day. I didn't have to live on campus. And the fact that Midwestern's program is 3 years instead of 4 was probably one of the biggest selling points for me.
Campus here is in Downers Grove. How about you?
It actually probably was a Google search, and I also worked alongside a couple of the alumni when I was in college.
Yeah, right. She said it's really hard, pharmacy school. Would you say the same?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely been the hardest couple years I've had.
I know there's a wait list for some of the programs, so you apply and hope you get in, huh?
Exactly.
Kind of nerve-wracking, isn't it?
Very nerve-wracking, considering I was on the wait list and got taken off just a couple weeks before school started.
Same for you?
For me, it was not as nerve-wracking. I think from the time that I interviewed and from the time that I got the call was like about a week. So not terrible, but that week felt like months, I'm not going to lie.
Watch these ladies online when the episode drops. Again, season 12 of something called The College Tour, where they tour colleges across the country. The big watch party they're hosting in Downers Grove is Tuesday, September 10th. And you can click online then and watch it that starting that day at midwestern.edu, midwestern.edu. Okay, ladies. Well, fascinating. Congratulations in advance. And looking forward to watching you either on Prime or on the site from the school itself. Well done.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.